Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Space Game Junkie Podcast. I, as always, am your co-host, Brian, and joining me, as always, is your co-host, Jim.
You know, he is no relation to the guy from Star Blazers. That's what? A different Deathlok entirely. Spelled different and everything.
I haven't even introduced them yet.
Shh.
Wait for me to get there, man.
Man, we have two towers spoilers. Of power on the show tonight. I don't even know if we can contain power of this magnitude.
Well, folks, you heard it from Jim first, but if you hadn't been made aware, if you're listening to this later, today is the 15th birthday of Free Space 2. Unarguably, I will say, the best game ever, at least in this genre, if not ever, in the history of any video game. And we have two guests who have quite a history with this game, and that's why I tried to bring them on board, because we're going to talk about quite a bit, hopefully. First guest is Stefan Janicki. You might know him online as Deathlok, longtime columnist and reviewer at PC Gamer Magazine, Computer Gaming World, GameSpot, and others, calling in from Toronto. Hello, Stefan.
Hi, guys. Happy to be here.
Yeah, we're happy to have you. And our other guest is Ian Warfield, calling in from Virginia. He is, here we go, he has a lot of titles, administrator of the Hardlight Project, project leader emeritus of the Source Code Project, co-leader of the Free Space Port and Silent Threat Reborn Port. Oh, of course I'm getting a phone call now. Creator of the Free Space Open Installer 2.0. Thank you very much for that. And leader of various other Free Space mods. Hello, Ian.
Hello. And those are just the ones you know about.
Oh, is there secret stuff? Is there secret stuff?
I always have secret projects. In Ooh. Fact, I have one secret project that's overdue from 2008, but...
that was we'll six probably... years ago.
I know, I'm a procrastinator.
Oh my god.
We'll probably talk about that in a bit, but yes, I always have secret projects in the pipeline.
So, today I wanted to do a Free Space 2 kind of roundtable retrospective. And I wanted to kind of start in the beginning and kind of go throughout kind of the history and how the game affected us and stuff like that. I have a few different topics I wanted to touch on. And the first one I wanted to talk on is we all played Free Space 1. Descent Free Space, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure that's a given.
Yeah.
For me, that really tempered expectations for the sequel because Descent Free Space was all right. It wasn't great, and it was really just kind of a also-ran at the time because there were tons of other, thankfully, games like that. So did how you enjoyed Free Space 1 affect how you were looking forward to your expectations for Free Space 2 at the time, guys?
I guess I'll...
you go.
Well, I want to say one thing.
Go ahead.
Yeah, sure. So one of the reviews I remember reading is that Descent Free Space didn't really do much new, but what it did very well. It basically took... the best elements from all the space simulator games that were out there at the time,
yes.
You know, X-Wing, TIE Fighter, Wing Commander, and all that. And it really took the elements and refined them and really presented them all in the best possible gameplay that it could get. And, you know, it had your basic story that was nothing too original, but it was a great game. A lot of people enjoyed it, and it set up an excellent foundation for Free Space 2.
Yeah. Stefan, did you want to say something?
I concur. I liked. I actually reviewed both these games back at the time when they came out for GameSpot, I think. And I liked Descent Free Space, but I thought it was it had some great technical. It was a well produced game, especially since Volition was a small company, unknown really at the time, really, other than for the Descent games, of course, which were. It was kind of a genre switch for them, and so I thought they did a competent job. It had some issues, but it was technically one of the better games in the genre at the time. But yeah, Free Space 2 was a significant evolution up.
Jim,
well, I would say it was a definite step up from Descent to Undermountain, which was their other. I think Stefan is brutally familiar with that. So, yeah.
Game of all time.
It is actually my all-time worst game was Descent to Undermountain. But
didn't like the floating goblins.
I don't think there was anything about that game other than uninstalling it that I actually enjoyed.
We should segue and talk a little bit about Descent to Undermountain.
Sure, why not?
Because people don't. I mean, that was the great beginnings of Black Isle Studios, right? Went on to, of course, create all the great, Planescape Torment, Fallout 2, and now same crew basically as Obsidian doing Pillars of Eternity and other, you know, great kind of interesting games. But man, did they have a bad start with Descent to Undermountain. They only published it, in fairness, but still didn't get the ship off on a good.
Well, the deal was Descent was okay. So the arc of things was first person shooters. We had Wolfenstein, we had Doom, there's other games like that, and then suddenly it was wow. Here's an FPS game like those, but it's completely 3D and it happens in tunnels and you can't tell up from down, and it was a spatially confusing roller coaster of fun. And nobody had ever seen anything like that before. So that was it. Yeah. It just really kind of made a heck of an impression. And then some people licensed that engine and decided we are going to make a Dungeons and Dragons role playing game with this engine. And I really do not understand how that ever came to pass, but.
A floating wizard or something, right? Well, I never played it, but you're a floaty wizard or something, right?
You weren't supposed to be floating. That was inadvertent.
But wait a minute. Everything I've seen in this game makes it look like you're floating.
Yeah, you weren't supposed to float. They just assumed that, hey, this is a 3D engine. We could use it to make a 3D, you know, dungeon crawl. Unfortunately, it became a dungeon float for
you know what else? Float. You know what else floats?
So that sounds like a terrible drink.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a floater.
You know another really terrible game was in this genre, Space Sims, came out at the same time as Descent Free Space, was XCOM Interceptor.
Oh, yes.
You know what? That has so much potential because it's one of the few Space Sims that actually has a dynamic campaign.
It's one of the few Space Sims where you feel like you're flying a 57 Chevy.
Well, the problem was the controls were terrible. I mean, they never fixed the joystick properly, and the mouse, I mean, even that was way too sensitive. You couldn't hit for shit, if I recall. It just wasn't that much fun.
No. But, speaking of history, though, what space games? Okay, so there was Wing Commander, sure. and then some other stuff like Epic, if anybody remembers that thing.
Oh, yeah.
And some other also things. And then, you know, TIE Fighter happened, which changed my life. And, you know, but between TIE Fighter and Free Space 1, I really don't have a lot of recollection of what was in that space.
Well, let's see. You had Renegade Battle for Jacob's Star. You had Star Crusader. You had Xenocracy. You had Forged Alliance, I believe. There was stuff in there. Plus,
you haven't named a really successful title yet, though.
That's because there weren't a lot. There were a lot of also-rans.
Mm-hmm. So whenever Descent Free Space – go ahead.
Tacky on the Fringe.
Oh, yes, oh. That. You know what? That actually came out at the same time because it, too, is having a 15th year right now.
Is it?
Yep. Because the only way that I know that is I was in the Internet Archive Wayback Machine, and I was hunting for articles about this game, and I noticed, like, right above that, back on Games Domain, I think it was, that it was, like, 1-2. Here's Free Space and Tachyon. So.
Well, it's also X-Wing Alliance's 15th year this year, but that, you know, whatever.
So we got kind of a triple shot there, though, after what I would call a drought.
Go ahead.
Sorry, the one big game that was actually good at the time, it wasn't that big in North America, but was Independence War, Iowa War, which was a throwback to, you know, Elite.
Oh, yes.
Yes. I loved that game, and I was terrible
at it. I imported that thing. I imported it before it came out here because I had to have it. Oh, my God, that game is still amazing.
Oh, yeah. And speaking of iWar, one of our very early shows, we made sweet, sweet lovin' to iWar 2 once we got it running again. That game was quite impressive. And they continue to make mods for the thing. And, boy, the map was terrible. But once you got the quick point of interest things instead of using the regular map, it was a whole different game.
So kind of back on topic. This was the first one was called Descent Free Space, but really had nothing to do with Descent, if I recall, right? Am I right about that? Or am I wrong about that?
Right. Yeah, well, it was made by the same team.
Well, yeah, but they put the name Descent on there because one Descent
for marketing.
Yeah, and also wasn't there a product back in the day called Free Space, like a hard drive thing or a memory thing, or wasn't there a thing?
That's what I've heard. That there was a trademark issue, they couldn't call it just plain old Free Space.
Yeah,
it does sound. I do remember utility, though, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah. The trailer though for Descent Free Space said it had some gameplay shots of regular Descent, and then it said this time you're not going. You know, actually, well, no, that was the Descent 3 trailer. I'm mixing up trailers here.
You know what,
I do have a Descent Free Space poster that says this time there are no boundaries or something like that. I'll have to go dig that up.
I do recall that advertising. I think it was Interplay being obnoxious and thinking that it had a really wise idea to leverage a franchise that was well known into something that was, you know, new. Unfortunately, as history proved, Interplay couldn't have done a worse job in promoting these games.
I know. Well, I also think the problem with when the second one came out is that the gaming landscape was really changing, wasn't it? Back, it was getting more console focused, and people were just ditching their joysticks. Like flight sims were on the way out, space sims were on the way out,
and it was like the height of the StarCraft craze too.
Was it?
Yeah, wasn't that right around then?
Yeah, StarCraft was 98, and obviously we were 99 for Free Space 2.
But it was still like that. That's StarCraft was – well, there was Warcraft 2, and that really got the RTS thing rolling. But then when StarCraft came out, then it was like full on – every studio wanted RTSs. You know, we were swimming in that stuff.
Well, I'm a total Annihilation man myself. Thank you very much.
That's right. but Descent Free Space was actually a reasonable commercial success. It was the genre really did, as you said, drop off in literally a year. Where, you know, Wing Commander Prophecy, which came out around the same time, also did poorly relative to the previous Wing Commander games. And but Free Space 2 was a colossal commercial failure, despite being one of the best games of all time, if not the best game of all time. I kind of concur with you on that.
Right. I mean, I think it sold. I think I found it sold only 33,000 copies at the
time. Yeah, I used to have stats on my old blog on which was supposed to only cover RPGs, but I couldn't help but cover space sims since they're actually really my favorite genre.
Yes.
And, it was like 16,000 copies, I think, in the first. it was really good. An ET level failure.
What I heard, and I want to preface this by saying this is all based on hearsay. This is rumors acquired over lurking on the Free Space bulletin boards and such, not based on any inside information. But what I understand, what I've heard, is that Interplay, part of the difficulty with the marketing of Free Space 2 is that Interplay really put pressure on Volition to release Free Space 2 a month early in order to make the end of the quarter, because the third fiscal quarter ends on September 30th for finance reasons or something. So they wanted a game release at the end of the quarter. So Volition basically moved heaven and earth to release the game a month early, and they succeeded. But due to a bureaucratic mix-up or something, the marketing budget wasn't scheduled to kick in until its actual release date, which was a month later.
Oh, no.
As a result, it spent a month on the shelves with no marketing. And a month later, when the time came for the marketing budget to kick in, and they say, okay, give us the marketing money, Interplay then said, well, you know, we're not going to spend any marketing money on a game that's not selling. So you're basically on your own.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I think their failing was even earlier than that. I mean, even though, you know, the timing of marketing obviously usually coincides with release or leading up to release, but there was really nothing on Free Space 2. I went to the ECTS back then, and when they were, and Free Space was in a tiny, that was the European equivalent to the E3 at the time, and it was a tiny little booth, which was like 95 degrees because they had no air conditioning, and so nobody was near it because it was such an uncomfortable environment, and I was seeing this magnificent game being displayed, and it was really frustrating to see how little attention it was getting in the promotion.
That is just a shame.
And of course, hot on the heels of this, they canceled the greatest game of all time, Secret of Vulcan Fury, because they
was that around then?
No, I'm looking that up. That was in February of '99, so never mind. That was ahead of this.
99 was a rough year.
Yeah,
I mean, a lot of good stuff came out, but it felt like the end of an era looking back now.
Well, it's funny. I mean, Interplay produced so many good games, but almost through happenstance. I mean, they had great teams, but man, as a corporate entity, they were just a terribly, terribly run company. And they just, they didn't know how to respond to the public markets. They were a public company, which was somewhat rare at the time, but nowhere near the size of, you know, what we think of now as modern, you know, gaming public companies like EA and Activision. So they were just, you know, they were the runt of the litter, and they didn't have a sophisticated management team, and they just kept making all these terrible, terrible business decisions with their products.
Yeah.
Sadly for us.
Do they still exist? Like, they still exist as some kind of entity, right?
They do. Their stock is trading at, like, pennies, but they do still technically exist.
Yeah. Do they exist in a file cabinet somewhere in somebody's back room? I mean,
apparently they have staff, and they have a website, and, you know, they're licensing their products, but I don't really know what they have. I think I remember seeing their website a couple months ago. It had, like, an interactive chess program on it or something. Not really anything Interplay specific.
Sorry about that.
The last kind of kick of the can they had was they tried to retain ownership of the Fallout MMO license, which they had the residual rights to when they licensed Bethesda, and they had to develop a game within a certain amount of time, and they put up a bunch of smoke and mirrors to pretend they were producing something to try and negotiate. It just seemed like it was obviously a negotiating tactic to get more money out of Bethesda.
I remember that, and that seemed like, I remember, like, just thinking, out of nowhere, all of a sudden, hey, we have this, and we want money for it. Like,
yeah. What? Well, the one concern that I have about the legacy of Interplay is that somewhere somebody has the voice acting tapes from Secret of Vulcan Fury, which was the last time that the original Star Trek cast ever did anything.
You can never let that go, can you?
I absolutely cannot. We had the guy from the what's that called? The Starship Bridge Simulator.
Okay, we had the lead programmer for Artemis, the bridge simulator, the multiplayer in the same room bridge simulator, and we found out inadvertently that he was the project lead on Secret of Vulcan Fury at Interplay at the time. So the podcast at the time just totally shifted gears toward that. And it's come up many times since, Jim.
Well, I have an agenda. So but that's the thing, though, is, like, somebody's got that stuff, right? And he was telling us.
I have some insight for you on that.
Oh.
No, I mean, it's just basically confirming what your belief is. I mean, the tapes definitely do exist, and they it was fully voiced. Like, that was all done. It was all in the can.
Mm.
And so they had DeForest Kelly and all the other cronies who are now passed away, sadly.
Yeah, well, he was telling us that he was actually sitting in on the voice sessions, and unfortunately, DeForest Kelly was kind of declining at the time because He said that he would come in and he could only do like half a day or whatever. And then there was some dispute about whether they were going to pay him for 2 days because he had to come back twice or what. And, you know, but anyway, yeah. So he said he was pretty aware that DeForest wasn't doing well. And then, of course, passed on shortly after.
I can't believe that that wouldn't be a more valuable asset than anything else Interplay currently owns.
Right? What the hell?
Make some money, guys. Like, make an animated cartoon out of it or something.
That'd be cool. I'd like to see that.
So on to my next question for you guys. What do you guys remember as your first memory of actually playing the game? Ian, let's start with you. What do you remember about the first time you actually played Free Space 2?
Well, Free Space 2 or Free Space 1?
Well, we're focusing on Free Space 2 because it's the better. Let's be honest. It's just the better of the games, and it's the one that has the legacy, really.
Yeah, I guess my first memory is playing the Free Space 2 demo after having completed Descent Free Space, and just being blown away by how good it was. The demo had two playable missions, a Nebula mission and a sort of intelligence mission where you had to do some SOC stuff that anticipated the main campaign. And just the Nebula effect, the beam effect, just the fact that it was Free Space and it was the same and yet different. And I was really excited to actually get the full game and experience it.
God, I totally forgot there was a demo. I'll be honest with you.
You should replay it. It's a good demo.
I don't think I ever played the demo.
It's worth playing. There are two missions that don't appear in the main campaign or anywhere else.
Are you kidding? Really?
Oh, what?
I'm not kidding.
I didn't know that.
It might be hard going back to 640 or whatever resolution.
Well, I'll tell you what. Several different people have actually extracted those missions from the demo and sort of gotten them working on actual full Free Space 2, which isn't very hard because it's the same game. And, I've done it myself. Somebody else on the forum has also done it.
So the demo was only 640 by 480? Because the game was 1024 by 768, right?
Well, the full game is available in two resolutions, both the 640 and the 1024. I don't know if the same is true for the demo.
Interesting.
God, I don't remember there being a demo at all.
Neither do I.
Steven, what about you? What do you remember first about playing this game?
Well, I was really lucky in that I got to play it earlier than most people because I reviewed it, and I actually have my review copy right in front of me. It's got my name printed on it, which is kind of fun.
Wow!
I'm so happy when I got it. I liked Descent Free Space, but what I'd really liked about Free Space 2 from the previews and you know other coverage that I'd seen of it prior to release was just things like the nebulas, like the beam weapons, the flak cannons, you know, they just really put together an experience that seemed more like being in the middle of a war in a giant anime kind of conflict. It just seemed to have a sense of scale and pull you in a way that Wing Commander, you were kind of a superhero, whereas in the Free Space games, you were just kind of a soldier and caught up in a bigger event, which actually appealed to me more.
Yeah, I totally.
You're still
agree.
Kind of a superhero soldier, though.
Yeah, but the game gave you a sense of fragility because if you got in between two cap ships and they decided to hammer each other with beams, you were just instantly dead. And you know, so that was kind of the lesson that it taught me real quick. Was that you are basically a gnat, you know? Please don't get swatted. You know, it's
you do feel like a cog in the machine. In fact, there was an interview done with the Volition staff, and they talked about how the cog in the machine feel would be retained from Free Space 1 to Free Space 2. And they were talking about that, and then the lead writer Jason Scott said, "But don't let that worry you." Because you can personalize your very own copy of Free Space 2 by changing your name to Pilot.
That's all you need.
So,
what?
Yes. You are. I mean, you technically have a name.
So, Jim, is that your first memory feeling fragile?
No, I would say my first memory was, oh, God, will the tutorials end? Because they put you through those training missions, and there's like 100 of them before you get to actually play a mission.
There's three.
Oh, but it keeps coming back, right? Like you fly a couple of campaign missions, and then, oh, gosh, a new tutorial. So I found that skip button that was up there in the corner, and that was the secret of my success. So
I actually like the way Free Space does that, though, because it's not like you have to complete every single training mission before you start the first meaningful mission. They really tell you just enough to get started, and then the more nuanced stuff comes later. So they give you a learning curve to sort of ease your way into it.
Yeah, I thought it was very interesting. Like the first thing that you're doing in the campaign is you get into that nebula, and it's really creepy because you know something bad is about to happen, and just the thing of you find that derelict ship out there and you're trying to recover it, and the Shivans show up and just all hell breaks loose. And it's pretty neat. But I would say one thing that I was definitely impressed with was in the Wing Commander games, the enemy ships would fly, kind of straight at you, and then they'd turn 180 and fly away from you. And so you didn't get a feel of flow of the ships actually flying a reasonable flight path, and the cinematicness of it wasn't there. And in the first Descent Free Space, you kind of got some of that, but it wasn't really on the scale of what was going on in 2, because there was just a lot of enemies out there, and you were watching, you're trying to shoot your targets, but you're watching your wingmen engage stuff, and it just kind of made that little bubble of simulated area feel a little more alive. Because the first game, it would be kind of like, well, here's a space station, and here's a ship attacking it, and some enemies coming at you. But in here, it just seemed like there was a lot of other ships that were also participating. You felt like you were part of a mission. You're not the lead of it, but you're just amongst.
Yeah, things would happen without your involvement.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think my first memory is the first thing I remember sticking out for me, at least, is the use of beam weapons. Because no other space game really had that. I mean, you had games with capital ships, obviously, but the beam weapons just felt like bigger lasers, that you had on your TIE fighter. It was slightly larger and more powerful. But in this game, holy crap, they sliced through shit. It's like, wow, oh boy.
And the sound that was so great for them.
Oh,
there's two types of beam weapons, right? There was like the ship-to-ship beam weapons, and there was the anti-fighter beam.
Yeah, there were two types of beams, and the anti-ship beams had this just massive sound, and when they sliced through a ship and the ship would blow up, you would hear it, you would feel it. Even if you didn't have force feedback, your like, whole screen would shake and you'd get damaged. Oh, man,
I found the sound of the exploding flak to be a lot more intimidating. Because I got rocked the by the flak a lot more than the beams. It was you'd hear that stuff
the
exploding.
Flak cannons
were
definitely more deadly to if you happen to wander in front of them. But in terms of shock and awe, nothing can beat the beam weapons.
Yeah, there really was nothing like it.
I want to change my answer because I now remember what I actually first thought.
Oh, okay.
So I just is actually the introduction, which I thought was fantastic. I mean, Descent Free Space kind of ended on a cliffhanger, right? They hadn't defeated the Shivans. They had just stopped them from getting back to Earth, and so they were trapped. So you had a situation where you didn't know what was going on back at Earth, but the introduction set out such a compelling story about how you had. The remnants of the Vasudans and the humans had basically banded together and created a confederation and prepared for nothing for 30 years just to expecting the Shivans to return. And it was just such an interesting kind of plot development. And then when the game first starts and you first start getting the hints that maybe the Shivans have returned, are we going to be ready for them? That was one of the things I thought was so exciting, was the prospect that we've had 30 years prepare for them. We've copied the beam weapons that the Shivans had it and on their flagship in the first game, because there was that one ship that had a beam weapon in the, right. in the original game, and when you achieve some, when you initially have some success against when the Shivans reappear, it's such a great feeling. You think, wow, we can compete head to head now. You know, it's such a rare game where they made an enemy that seems so invincible, and yet they didn't diminish the Shivans at any time in either game. They always just seemed like an unstoppable force and came up with plausible ways for you to stomp them.
Well, and one thing you mentioned in your review was that they also didn't radically change the Shivans either between games. I mean, 30 years had passed, and it's not like, oh, well, Shivans show up with, you know, next generation stuff. It was still the same Shivans, but then they introduced more ships because we just didn't see everything that they had, because they had a very limited force that almost rolled over us the first time.
That's right. And that was again, it was just such smart design to have.
Smart, you know, storytelling.
Yeah. I mean, we had changed a lot. The Sudans and the humans had changed a lot in preparations for fighting the Shivans. But it would have made no sense for the Shivans to have evolved radically when they had been this, you know, set out to be this eternal force, or, you know, force that had been around for tens of thousands of years, wiping out. It's amazing how similar the Shivans are really to the Mass Effect Reapers. It's basically the same story.
Yeah, that's actually what I was thinking. Was I was about to ask, well, I wonder if it had any effect or any influence on Mass Effect, and I think we're both thinking the same thing.
Let's talk about the Shivans a bit, because they make such a return in this game. I mean, the first time you see a Sathanas, I don't know about you, but I nearly cried, because that thing, oh my god, scary as crap. And yep. they never stop being scary. That's the beauty of it. They never stop being intimidating. Even if you're, you know, shooting down their little fighters, or you're taking out a few of their destroyers, they never stop being intimidating. It's probably one of the best villains in any game I've ever encountered, really.
Yeah, and they're still so mysterious by the end of the series. Then the battle, trying to stop the first, I can't pronounce it. This is Sathanas. What do you call it? Yeah.
I believe it's the Sathanas. It's kind of hard to say. Yeah,
and it's, you know, you have that series of missions where it's coming, and you try and weaken it, and you know, the Colossus, the great hope for the humans and the Vasudans, is, you know, you're trying to get it in position to be able to halt it, and the battle between the Sathanas and the Colossus is one of my all time favorite.
Oh my god!
Moments in gaming.
Oh my god, I cried when spoilers, folks, if you, I know it's a 15-year-old game, but if we're spoiling you here, when the Sathanas just sliced through the Colossus.
No, but you beat the Sathanas got beat by the Colossus. That was the fun of it, was, you know, you'd finally achieved it, and then like seven more Sathanas showed up.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yes, we did it. Oh god, what? Boom. It's like, oh no. Yeah. Oh, it was crushing. And what about you? And what do you think of the Shivans?
Oh, they're great. They're actually, I agree that the beauty of the Shivans as a plot device is that you still know very little about them. You know, going back to Star Trek a little bit, you watch Next Generation when the Borg are first introduced, and they are this just faceless, menacing foe. And Next Generation really didn't do very many Borg episodes, so they still sort of maintained their sort of scariness. But then if you've actually watched Star Trek Voyager, the Borg are completely changed around, and they're out of, I guess, a motivation to get more Borg episodes or something. They just completely – first of all, they make them less powerful. They change the personality. They change several canonical facts about them. It's really frustrating, because you remember back in Next Generation how menacing they were.
Yeah.
And then Voyager goes and beats them almost without even trying. It's not all that fun. And that's really the danger of trying to incorporate a really, really appealing enemy. The danger is trying to do too much of it. The risk is that by trying to examine the enemy, it becomes less scary because you figure out its motivations, or you figure out that it's actually weaker than you thought or something. And in contrast to the Shivans, not only do you still know nothing about their motivations or what they're doing, they actually become more powerful than you thought, because you thought they had, you know, basically one super ship per fleet. And then at the end of Free Space 2, you're like, oh, wait, there are 80 of them. And
we are so screwed.
And they're just doing weird things. They're doing things that are incomprehensible, that are never explained. But
yeah, you don't know what's going on.
Like, there's so... I mean, one of the things... I mean, because of the production budget and timing that we talked about earlier was so accelerated and limited that Volition never really had a chance to show some of the things they wanted to do with the Shivans in the sequel. I mean, the Shivans don't actually appear in the sequel in any of the cinematics. They're only in the first. They're only in the first Free Space game, and they did. They were going to have a little more exposure, but what they did such a great job at condensing their involvement and making everything so important. Like the whole idea of trying to communicate with them. That whole first third or first 40% of the game, where you're dealing with the Civil War and the attempt to possibly communicate with them, and what will that achieve? And and then my personal favorite moment, it was at the very end of the game where you think you have the Shivans kind of on the run, perhaps, and you're very, very wrong, as it turns out. But the but then you when you invade their space and you just see these strange machines. And your mission is to blow them up, but you don't even know what they are. You don't even know what they're doing. You don't know if they're, you know, refining energy or if they're schools with children. Who knows? You know, like it's never really explained. You just think that they might be important, and they only those factories or whatever they are only appear once in the game. And then at the end, of course, the very end of the game, when you realize that the Shivans cause supernova a sun, and some of them take off and not all of them take off. You don't know why some stay, if they have to stay to trigger it, or if, you know, why did some sacrifice themselves and others leave? You know, you just don't know what they're doing, and they're never diminished. Which is such a rare thing, and so unlike the Reapers in Mass Effect, who ended up being the plaything of a little space child.
Oh, really? I was thinking of the angels on Doctor Who. I don't know if you guys watch Doctor Who, but
yeah, that's another good analogy. For
sure. Yeah, the first time you see the weeping angels, they're scary as fuck, you know, totally terrifying. And then they show them a few more times. You're like, oh, they're not so scary now.
And they change their abilities too. It seemed like they grab you and they move you into the past, and then it's like, oh no, then they just tear you apart.
I that doesn't make any sense. Like, what do they do? And they're not scary anymore. I don't care.
I prefer that they remain ultra creepy instead of just plain deadly, because at deadly we're used to that, but creepy is creepy. So
I mean, it kind of reminds me of Jaws a little bit, where you don't barely see the shark to like the last moments of the movie. And it's just such this buildup. But even here, you'd never see the shark. You just see its teeth, basically, really.
Well, and the thing, in the first game, I remember some of the cinematics, even in the very opening of the game. And the Shivans are not a Star Trek alien race where they have, like, a funny nose and pointy ears, right? They are, like, just not even a recognizable creature. You know, they're like, what, tripeds with then two arms that come up out of their back or something. It's almost scorpion looking.
I don't even remember, honestly.
Yeah, and they've got like three eyes that glow, and yeah, they're like super crazy, creepy War of the Worlds looking things. And that's great.
Mechanical.
And they don't. What even was their motivation? Did they ever? We never had a conversation. It was just like, hey, what's that? Oh God, it just rolled over us. You know, like we weren't even here. You know,
but what we did know was that they appeared every time life in the universe had reached a point where they had intergalactic travel to a certain extent, the Shivans just showed up and wiped everything out. And because there was, you know, one of the a lot of the background story in Free Space is delivered in the form of analysis of this ancient culture that had been previously wiped out by the Shivans.
This sounds like another game that I have played. Golly. It's, yes. Yeah. God, the Mass Effect is strong with this one. Yeah, interesting. So I did also like that graphically in the game, their ships were difficult to see because you're in space, it's black, their ships are black, but they've got like red highlights on them. So it was not like, oh, there they are way over there kind of thing. It was it made you rely on your sensors a little bit, and you know, you were kind of curious like to get a good look at them. And then, of course, they put you in a nebula, too. So,
yeah, and the sensors didn't even work in the first game. In Descent Free Space, part of the plot was figuring out how to target them.
Oh, right.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
I forgot about that. So let's touch on a topic we kind of breezed upon a bit. How helpless you felt in this game every now and again. Like we were talking about with that Colossus mission. There were a good amount of times in this game where, like you were saying, Ian, you felt like a cog. You know, you're just the pilot, really. And when you, like, for example, when you lose a cap ship, you feel like you're being punched in the gut, for example, because those things have weight in this game. So I think this game, better than just about any other game like it, really made you feel powerless every now and again. And that worked.
Well, they had a level of technology in the first game. Just we couldn't understand or touch, right? So we would just get, like, swatted out of the air. And then in this game, at least, you know, we'd kind of evened it up by reverse engineering some of their stuff, but we were still at a great disadvantage. So
the first game we did at the beginning, we didn't even have shields, right? That was,
exactly. But what I loved is about the plot is it just felt more hopeless and you felt more powerless as it went on.
Well, it didn't feel exclusively hopeless. I mean, there's one type of plot which is just despair and it grinds you into the ground, but Free Space 2 wasn't really like that, because you start off in something completely different, fighting the NTF, and then the Shivans appear and you're scared, but then you beat them back, and it's like a hope spot, and then the Shivans come after you again and you put up a fight, and that's the high point of the game when the Colossus defeats the Satanas. And then you do some more other missions. And then at the end of the game, that's basically when the Shivans unleash their full force.
Yeah.
So it's not a sense of hopelessness through the entire game.
No.
It's sort of peaks and troughs.
Yeah.
And the peaks and troughs make it more fun and more interesting.
I agree. Like, you have little bits of hope, and then it gets dashed. And then you, maybe we're doing okay. Oh, no, we're not.
Yeah, and the victories that you have are really satisfying.
Like, yeah.
Like when you first defeat when the Shivans first make their breakout from their space and you fight them and you realize, hey, we can go toe to toe with these fools. You know, we've learned something from their first encounter. And then it becomes for a long period in the game, a kind of a mission of discovery. And but you know, we could close this gate, but let's keep it open. We can learn some stuff about this that we can use in the future. And they make the error of keeping the gate open too long, as fate would have it. But you know, they go into Shivan space, they explore it, they learn things, and you know, obviously Bosch and his NTF crew have their own kind of agenda as well. Another kind of mysterious enemy. You never really know what the heck Bosch is up to either. And why he, you know, rebelled so violently.
You get hints, but not the full picture.
Yeah, I mean, you know that he wants to. Ultimately, he wants to communicate. But if that's what he wanted, why didn't he just try and, you know, introduce that as an option to the Federation and try and gain support for it instead of just declaring war? Excuse me.
And I gotta say, for Bosch, I think they got the perfect voice actor in what's his name, Richard Cox. Ronnie Cox? Oh, my God. He was – I mean, this game does have some great voice actors, but I think he really stole the show.
Yes.
As Bosch.
And just the economy. They had such a tiny budget for this game for things like voice acting, and they got just the right – you know, the right voices for the limited number. There wasn't a ton of dialogue, period, but it was also well written, it was also well acted, and communicated a great deal with that, without, you know, having the modern budget of compare what Destiny did with their great voice acting budget and mages that made didn't come from the moon.
What did they do? I've not played Destiny. What did they do?
Oh man,
there was just the notorious early beta release, which had Peter Dinklage's acting. And he clearly mailed it in the worst possible way. Oh. And he was just saying really bland lines like, "That wizard came from the moon."
What?
It was like, what? It just, none of it seemed to really fit. He just sounded really asleep. And
so much so that they
ended up taking out a lot of his dialogue and adding a lot of synthetic effects to try and change it. And making T-shirts out of his bad dialogue and selling them.
What?
They got capitalized on it. So.
Oh, that's great. But I wanted to talk about the story too, because we talked about the voice actors and how they were used in the story a little bit. But the story really, to me, stands out not only in space, you know, gaming, but just in general as just being so well crafted. What do you guys think?
I mean, it was definitely well crafted. It was intriguing. It didn't throw everything at you at once. It sort of revealed it bit by bit over time. Mm-hmm. It sort of left you a mystery to uncover. It had the peaks and troughs, which made it interesting. And it incorporated elements from the previous game in a way that just made so much sense. Things like the characteristic of jump nodes, even hints about the GTI and Silent Threat. And the Terran Vasudan alliance and what that meant for the plot of the second game. It was really done well on several different aspects.
It built so well on the foundation of the first game. I mean, this is gaming's Empire Strikes Back. I mean, it very rarely has a game taken what the original did and created a sequel that didn't just retry and remake the original, but kind of evolved it in a way that, you know, that made sense, was satisfying, and just made you appreciate both games more in a way. This story for Free Space 2 is my favorite story of any game ever.
I agree. It's just, I love how you don't get all the pieces, and there are all these holes that you never understand.
But you don't feel burned.
No, not at all, because you're a pilot. You're not supposed to know everything.
Yeah.
You know, there are always going to be gaps in your knowledge, but it just feels natural here.
But, I mean, again, to compare to Mass Effect, which has a similar plot of this, you know, ancient race of mechanical beings that wipes out civilization whenever it gets to a certain intergalactic stage, that game didn't tell you everything either, but it didn't tell you in a really annoying way.
Really?
And everything was inconsistent. Nothing really seemed to make sense. It doesn't really survive scrutiny. Whereas I think Free Space withstands a great deal of scrutiny. Everything is so... I don't know. I would really like to know more. Maybe you guys do. Maybe Ian does. About the team that wrote Free Space and what the heck they're doing. Because to the extent there's ever been talk about doing another game, I know the IP is kind of in uncertain state, but
yeah,
it wouldn't be the same without the same writer. Because I mean, I think as great as the technical achievements of Free Space are, and as great as the engine is, and you know things like the beam weapons and the size of the enemies and all the other stuff, the voice acting, nothing really beats the story. This is the most intelligent story of any game I've ever played.
Yeah. I think one of the ways one of the reasons it's so intelligent is because it trusts the audience.
Yes.
It doesn't feel the need to spoon feed me everything. It doesn't feel the need to shove everything in my face. You know, it trusts the audience intelligence.
Well, that, and they didn't rely on a lot of cutscenes and stuff to.
Yeah,
to
they told it like just, in the game. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it was pretty much your point of view the entire time. So I appreciated that.
Yeah, I wanted to get I tried to get the lead designer for the game on the show, but I didn't make that work out, obviously. So I won't, because that's one of the things I wanted to find out is where everyone went to. I just didn't have the time to do that research.
Who is still at Volition who made this game?
Well, I believe the lead designer, I think his name is Adam Pelcher. Pletcher. He's still there, I believe. But I don't remember who else. I just didn't have time to go down that rabbit hole. Unfortunately, I wanted to.
Yeah, well, Pletcher is more of an art director now, I believe.
Is he?
Yeah, because he worked on Red Faction Armageddon, Saints Row the Third, the original Saints Row. Yeah, did some work. He was lead artist on Summoner back in 2000. So yeah, he transitioned into an art role after this.
Well, good for him.
I do have sort of along the lines of what you're asking, Brian, is that the lead writer for Free Space 2, Jason Scott, one of our forum members on Hard Light Productions actually tracked him down and conducted an interview with him. So I'm going to send you a link over the chat to that interview. And it talks about a little bit about what they were thinking and a little bit about what they thought might have been the case for Free Space 2. It's nothing concrete. Well, a little bit concrete. Not everything is concrete. So it gives you a little bit of hints of what they were thinking, at the risk of possibly spoiling the magic, but it's still interesting to read about some of the factoids.
Yeah, he is still at Volition, by the way. Volition/Deep Silver. Because he worked on Saints Row the Fourth.
Oh. Is that the one that's coming out?
Or no, that's the current one.
Oh, that's I can't keep track anymore.
So I mean he's still active and publishing things.
Oh, good. So, maybe we should try and get them on at some point.
Yeah, and I think he's actually in he's studio design director over there.
Oh.
I'm glad the Shivans didn't have dildo weapons.
Dildo? Wait, what? Dildo weapons?
Yeah, they come up and smack you with a big purple wiener.
Oh.
This is kind of an interesting segue, how they went from, you know, making a game that was so kind of hard sci-fi to, you know, so over the top, an even more over the top version of Grand Theft Auto kind of.
Well, that was the thing, right? Whenever they did the initial Saints Row, it was kind of a less than Grand Theft Auto, you know, trying to catch up and be a Me Too. And then they found their absurd niche with Saints Row 2, which I think actually peaked at the point where you had a septic tank truck and you were spraying.
I love that. I love that so much. When I heard that wasn't in the third game, I just stopped caring about it. I'm like, I'm not even going to bother playing this.
Yeah, but that actually, I mean, they were just a fairly serious yet cartoony-ish looking also, you know, thing. But then whenever they got to Saints Row 2, they were just like, yeah, we can't do that. We need to find our own direction. And they went into complete insano world.
It seems to be working for them, which is great. I just wish they could make Free Space 3. But,
well, you know, Volition, they've said many times, we would love to make Free Space 3.
Well, think of the savings they would have on the engine development because, you know, it really, the state that Free Space is in right now is, it looks like a AAA thing that could roll off the shelf right now. You know, the stuff that's been done to that thing.
Well, let's talk about that a bit. So, Ian, if I recall, the source code was released in 2002. After Volition was bought by THQ,
mm-hmm.
And when did you come on the project?
So, I guess that's a pretty big story in and of itself. So the source code was released in 2002, and I ended up joining the source code project that fall. Oh. And during the 2002-2003 Christmas break from college, I ended up coding a ton of features. I coded so many features, in fact, over the next year that they made me source code project leader. And we've just been this is not a product of just myself. There have been so many contributors to it. There have been so many people who have made, you know, literally tens of thousands of commits over the years. And everybody has a different specialty. Some people work on mission design. Some people work on audio and video. Some people work on
the lost my train of thought. The graphical effects, new ships and new explosions and new things like that. So there are really the Free Space source code release has been a godsend because we just took it and ran with it, and we've just been able to do so many cool things with it.
Yeah. So when we had the Eon, he was showing us a lot of stuff that was going on in Blue Planet, and it's does that stuff get backported into the main engine at some point, and then the rest of the project comes forward into that, or is that a fork that's going to just go down its own road, or what? Because there is some pretty crazy stuff that was on display graphically in there.
Right. So it's not really the case that Blue Planet has its own engine. Blue Planet uses the same engine that is released by the Source Code Project as its product. What the deal is the Source Code Project has features. Basically, every coder has his own idea of what would be a cool thing to add to the engine, so that person codes it up. Or a mod might request a feature, and the coder might code it up. And we release a single build, an official build. We're currently at 3.7 is the last official build, and we're working on 3.7.2. And every mod just uses the features that that mod needs. So the engine can really do all the things in Blue Planet, but it can also do all the things in all these other mods. Wing Commander Saga uses the Source Code Project engine as well, although they ended up forking it about a year or so before it was released, and that's another story. But for the most part, every mod uses the same engine, and they just enable the particular features that that mod needs.
Okay, so by way of, I guess it's the agreement, I wouldn't, maybe license or whatever, but whenever people come in on this and say, okay, we're going to develop off this project, is there an understanding in place that, hey, if you make some whiz-bang cool shader thing, and I am also working on a different fork of this, that I can just reach over and grab that super cool thing you just made and then come plug it into mine? Or do they have some isolation between?
Yeah, well, the understanding is that everybody's features goes into the same engine. So we try not to step on each other's toes. So we all code the features that we're most suitable for coding, because we all have different areas of expertise. But we try to make them all work together so that different parts of the game are optimized in different ways and enhanced in different ways, but they all come together to make one single engine that is then released.
Okay, so other thing that I've heard about the game is that the mission editor, the name escapes me, but the
Fred
is probably the greatest mission editor that has ever been. Like it just does so much stuff. It's so easy to work with. Have you guys had to modify Fred, or does it just stand as it was because it was that solid?
Well, we modify Fred because whenever we add a new product to the game, the mission designer has to have some way of enabling that feature. And if it's a mission-based feature, it's done through the mission editor, which is Fred. So yes, we've modified and enhanced Fred quite a bit, quite extensively, actually, through the years. But as far as Fred being a great modding tool, absolutely. Fred, even when it was released for Free Space 1 and also for Free Space 2, just as a mission editor, it's one of the best designed mission editors of any game out there at all. We actually have people who have visited Hardlight Productions who say that they have used modding tools that have been produced in-house by game companies to create the content that's published in their games, and that Fred is a better mission editor than these in-house modding editors that these game developers actual modern game developers use in their code. Fred is better than just about all their mission editors.
Wow.
It's just it's so easy to use. Its event system is so intuitive and so flexible. That is, in fact, one of the
reasons for the success of the source code project is because the event operators called symbolic expressions or SXPs, it's ridiculously easy to add those to the source code. And in fact, new coders who join the source code project, they usually start out by adding new symbolic expressions. And it's just so easy to enhance FRED, and FRED itself is so easy to use. That's one of the major reasons for the success of the modding community today.
Yeah, and thank God for that, because I've rarely run into a game that has the legs that this one does, thanks to the source code project.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there are two reasons, I think two foundational reasons for the success of Free Space 2. Number one is the story, because the story really laid the foundation for a whole bunch of user-generated content that expands on the story and really allows people to tell different variations and different tangents on that core story that started out. And the second foundation is the ease of FRED as a mission editor. Because when you think about modding, really, what is the thing that is most needed in a mod? Ships are nice, weapons are nice, graphics are nice. But in order to generate additional gameplay, you need additional missions. So the ease of use of the mission editor is really the fundamental thing that you really need to get right in order to keep producing new campaigns and new missions 15 years after the game is released.
Which is just amazing. Now, you say, I read in the in your title, you created the installer. There is a new version of the installer. Is that correct?
That's correct. So we had a member of Hardlight Productions whose screen name is Turi, who released the version 1.0 back in, I think it was 2006.
Yeah.
And it worked pretty well. It was basically a simplified version of the installer that is released now, and it connected to the web, it downloaded all the mods, and it really walked you through the process from start to finish. The version 2 of the installer, the need was motivated by the fact that there were some bugs in the original version. There was also not a lot of flexibility in certain design aspects. And then there were some features people wanted, like being able to download mods in parallel or being able to specify additional metadata about their mods. So the new version of the Free Space installer, I basically started out with Therese's source code, and I took the design choices and maybe a couple of the utility classes, but I basically rewrote the entire thing and tried to add as many features as people requested, added support for 7-zip, for example, which people had wanted because it's much better compression than regular zip.
Hmm.
Dependencies between mods, a couple other things, fixed a bunch of bugs. And right now, if you go to fsoinstaller.com, you can download the Free Space installer, connect to the web, and see download pretty much any mod you want.
Mm, nice. And that works with the GOG or the Steam versions?
Yeah, that's another feature of the installer. The good old games executable, you can download the setup program, and that works great for setting up Free Space on Windows, but the Free Space Open Engine made by the Source Code Project has been ported to additional platforms, OS X and Linux. So Taylor actually is the member who really was responsible for a lot of success with that, and the Iculus.org port really helped us out with that. So we've got Free Space running on all the major platforms now, and so as long as you can get the game data to the other platform, then you can download the Source Code Project engine and run it. Now, in order to get the game data, usually what you need to do is install it on a Windows machine and copy it over. Now, somebody out there has created a utility called InnoExtract, which is capable of extracting the game data out of the good old games installer. So I added a hook in the Free Space Open installer to call that utility, so that rather than having to go through the rigmarole of installing the Windows and copy it over,
This utility can simply extract it directly from the good old games setup program so that you can extract the data, download the mods, download the FreeSpace Open Engine, and you're good to go.
And that's on Mac and Linux.
Works on Mac and Linux. So for those really diehard Mac and Linux people who don't want to touch Windows for any reason whatsoever, you don't have to do that anymore.
Do those people exist? I guess they probably do.
I guess they exist, but that's really the sort of most extreme version.
Yeah, Eric S. Raymond actually plays Free Space by email. And
no Amiga version?
Yeah.
Amiga 500 version.
I'd like to see this that.
Free Space, the original one, did come out for the Amiga.
What? Oh, really? It did. I was completely unaware of that.
Wow. Wait. Descent Free Space came out for the Amiga?
It did.
How could that even work? Because I had an Amiga 500, and I played Wing Commander at like 3 FPS. So so it must have been like an Amiga 10,000 or something.
I played Ultima 6 on the Amiga 500, and it played it at two frames per second. So yeah, it wasn't quite up to Descent Free Space standards, but I guess the latest and greatest Amigas, whenever they were concocted, were able to play it because it was apparently one of the more popular games at the in the end life of.
Yeah,
of the
Amiga. You know, I found out that XCOM from Microprose actually got released on the Amiga as well. Of course, I was far off that platform by that point, but yeah.
That's... In 2001, it came to the Amiga by Hyperion Entertainment. It runs only on Amiga 1 systems, whatever that means.
What is that even? I don't even know. I've never heard of such a thing. I mean, I remember... go ahead.
I'll give you a YouTube video. Someone who's listening to the podcast right now messaged me with a link to a YouTube video of Free Space being played on the Amiga.
God. I'll have to watch that later. That sounds... Both
well, you can put it on the podcast.
I don't know how. I don't know how I would do that.
The podcast is currently showing the debriefing screen from one of your playthrough videos.
Yeah, I don't know how to slave it to a YouTube video. I'm a little new at this stuff. Sorry about that. I can link it with the show notes. I can link it in the podcast post and the YouTube video, so people can still see it.
Okay.
Because
that can't be missed.
I need to see that. That sounds I don't even know what to think of that. Now, I wanted to talk I just heard it. Thank you. I wanted to talk real quick about probably one of my favorite little elements of this game that still hasn't been beaten to this day besides, obviously, the story. The HUD. Out of all the space games I've played, this has the best heads-up display I've ever encountered. I think. I mean, it's got everything, and it's all easily accessible, easily visible. I mean, you had your TIE fighter and your Wing Commander, and they were fine. But I mean, they nailed it with this one.
Yeah, and being able to customize the colors
and turn certain elements on and off.
There was just so much information conveyed in such seamless, you know, unintrusive fashion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really think this is another example of Volition just taking what worked in previous games, like X-Wing and TIE Fighter and Wing Commander, and just refining it and optimizing it. Because, like, in TIE Fighter, for example, you would fly around and you would have this big cockpit view, and that was cool because it, you know, it would change according to what fighter you were in, and the gauges would move around and stuff. But it also had that key to press to disable the cockpit for when you were doing an intense dogfight and you really needed to see everything. And I guess what the Free Space designers decided to do is have that view on all the time, but have transparent gauges that would show you the information you needed to know.
Yeah, like TIE Fighter did have that transparent view, but it removed most of the information except for like your radar.
Mm-hmm.
And it made it almost kind of useless, at least for me. Like, I never used that view in TIE Fighter because it took so much information away.
Well, you lost your energy gauges, but you were still able to see the reticle with where your lasers were pointing and whether it was lasers or missiles that were enabled and a couple other things. But you're right that a lot of the information did get missed. For example, you didn't have a target indicator display.
That got removed.
Yeah, and in TIE Fighter, that thing is essential because it shows you like where your target. Like in this game, it shows you have your little window that shows you where your target's facing, and everything, and that gets lost when you turn that transparent view on. But here, it's got so little, many little touches. Like one of my favorite little touches of this HUD is when multiple friendlies are attacking a target. You just have little dots next to the targeting bracket to show you that.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a clear little simple indicator, and you don't need any more than that.
Yeah.
This game does so much fucking right. It really fucking does.
Yeah.
I wonder if it did things so right that advancement in space game HUDs and stuff that like everybody just says, okay, well that's it. We'll just keep using that. And that's maybe why nobody has bothered to, you know, it's like all the development happens in this engine instead of somebody saying, okay, well, I'm going to like bake a new engine or a new look for this stuff. You know, I wonder if it actually just halted progress because they said, all right, that's perfection. We don't need to improve that.
I don't know if I could disagree with that. I mean, I was playing Elite Dangerous a little bit earlier, and yeah, it looks great, and the HUD's serviceable and everything, but it's not this.
Yeah, I wish everyone copied it, to be honest. I wish, like the X Games, the Elite, every, you know, it's all so simple, and yet, you know, it's the subtle things, like all the, just the little gauges that are surrounding the, you know, the center of the HUD. And just the information they convey, just with you know a flashing light here, you know, or a little line here, and you know it's something that doesn't really distract you from the heat of a dogfight, and yet the information's all there, quickly accessible if you want it.
Yeah, exactly. You really don't have to take your eyes off the target to get like like right now I'm looking at the video and you can see right in the middle of your reticle, you can see their hull and their shields and whether you're being shot at. And you can just see all that right in the middle of your reticle. And it's just clearly right there. And it gives you so much situational awareness that it makes dogfighting. And I'm just going to say it. I've played a lot of other sims and I love the dogfighting in TIE Fighter and I love the dogfighting in Wing Commander. But nothing beats this one. It just feels so fluid, like you said earlier, Jim. It has a flow. I mean, you're in a contained area, obviously. You're in wherever the mission puts you, but it doesn't feel contained, I think. I can't rave about this game enough, seriously. Oh, my God. I mean, it gets so much right. I mean, auto-target and auto-speed. Little things like that just make not having to deal with them in the moment so much easier to make it makes combat easier to deal with where you don't have to deal with that stuff in the moment.
Or escorting or whatever.
Yeah. Oh, God, the escort list is one of my favorites. Yeah. Or the monitoring list or whatever they call it. Yeah, the escort list. I mean, seriously, give me that in every game. Why doesn't every fucking space game have a goddamn escort list?
You know what the greatest feature is in this game is actually an omission. There's no teleporting torpedo that you have to shoot down.
Well, I got bad news for you then. That's one of the features that the Source Code Project has enabled. So are mods.
Oh no!
There are mods that have teleporting torpedoes.
Do they need that for the Wing Commander thing? Because that's really where that comes from.
Yeah, it comes from Wing Commander.
I'm not quite sure where that's being used. It is being used. Actually, somebody is thinking about doing teleporting beams as well.
What?
So,
how? How does that even work? How does
I don't know. I presume a subspace portal opens and the beam shoots through it to whatever ship is on the other side.
That must be a cheat. That sounds like cheating. That really does sound like
No, they're just thinking with portals. That's all.
Yeah, there you go.
No, it's like that. Remember, what was that stupid D-Space 9 episode? It was an Ezri Dax episode where she had the sniper rifle that could transport the bullet.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever that murder mystery episode. You know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, that was a fun episode for other reasons. But, yeah, that was kind of the teleporting bullet.
Like, what? That's what that reminds me of.
That was a weird episode.
Well, every Ezri Dax episode was a weird episode.
Actually, though, In terms of gameplay in Free Space in general, I think one of the gameplay is really one of the things that Volition did exceptionally well. If you think about the design courses choices made in Free Space 2, for example, they probably sat down people at a table and said and brainstormed and say, okay, what cool features can we add to this new version of the game that we're producing? And someone said, well, you know, let's make beams, or, well, you know, let's make a nebula, or something like that. But the great thing about Free Space is that they didn't have these new features just to have them. They incorporated them into the story, because you had beams, because the super ship in the original Free Space had beams. And you had a nebula, because it was an integral part of the story. That's where you found the Shivans, and it foreshadowed the supernova that happened at the end of the game. Spoiler alert for those who are 15 years behind.
Hopefully they're not
so, and another thing, like Volition said, maybe let's have squadrons. Let's have a new squadron commander every couple missions, and let's give them a squadron insignia. And rather than just changing people for the sake of having a new voice actor, they incorporated them into miniature story arcs. Like, the first story arc of three missions is you're fighting the NTF, and the next story arc of four missions is you discover the Shivans, and then you have your first initial victory, and then you go back to fighting the NTF again for three more missions. And then you have the SOC loop, the first SOC loop for three missions, and you just proceed from there throughout the entire campaign, and every change in squadron corresponds to a new story arc that has a new fundamental development in the overall story of the entire game.
Right. Yeah, and that worked. I mean, you know, you felt like this is where they needed me. This is where they're putting me on the front lines. And that just felt natural, you know, switching from squadron to squadron. Like right now in my game, I'm in the Vasudan exchange program, which is fun. Because their ships are neat. I love their interceptor. I forget what it's called. What's it?
Do you remember? Capital ships.
Oh yeah, they're
kind of smooth capital ships. I love the design. How the capital ships change between the original game. The kind of clunky square ships of the original human capital ships and compared to the more streamlined, smooth lines.
Yeah, I love the GTVA Colossus. That thing was huge. Yeah. And, you know, whenever it came in and assaulted stuff, it was just like, yeah, there's a beating going on. So
I love how it looks like a big gun. It kind of has the handle.
A big water pistol.
Yeah, it kind of looks like a big, like, yeah, maybe a water pistol with that handle. Looks like an awkward gun, but it still looks like a gun to me.
another thing that can't be, you know, overemphasized is this game came out 1 year after the first one.
Did
it? It is such a significant leap forward. I mean, it uses the same engine, so it's just a refined version of the engine, but they added a lot of features in it, like we've discussed. And obviously, you know, did such a great job on the storylines, the mission design. If they had, you know, a normal development cycle for, you know, top-tier game these days, and with a team with the size of, you know, a modern team, like, I just... It would have been interesting to see what they could have come up with. I mean, I know they had a lot of ideas for Free Space 2, a lot of content that they wanted to include that they weren't able to, including, you know, atmospheric missions. They wanted to go even further over the top with some of the beam weapon stuff, which they ended up carving back to keep it more grounded, which I think was a good choice. They kind of were going a little too far in the anime direction, whereas I think where they ultimately came out, they have... You know, it feels very grounded. The technology feels kind of like hard science.
I agree. Now, I guess my last question, do we think this will ever be beaten? I mean, it's been 15 years and it still hasn't. I mean, I guess it has to be at some point, but will it be? I mean, I have a hard time believing it will be. I mean, I think this game is lightning, and it's lightning doesn't strike more than once usually.
Well, you know, ever is a long time.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it may not happen in the near future, but I suspect that computer gaming follows trends where something comes into fashion and then goes out of fashion, and then, you know, maybe a generation later it comes back into fashion again. I mean, this is sort of switching genres, but in the 80s and early 90s, adventure gaming was huge.
Yeah.
And King's Quest was the gold standard in adventure games. And that sort of faded away in the mid to late 90s as other game genres came to the fore. But sort of people kept playing them in the background. People would compose like text adventure games just for the sake of having an adventure. More recently, there have been fan-made upgrades of taking the original low-resolution King's Quest games and making them high-resolution. And so it never really went away. And now, within just the past couple months, I heard that there is a game development company which is making a new entry in the King's Quest series.
What?
Yes.
Really?
Huh. Yeah.
I don't know how to feel about that. A new actual
factual. Yeah, it's it was only announced in August, I think.
Oh.
Let me see what the publisher is.
That's probably why I missed it. I was moving. But I stopped at 5 with the King's Quest. No, 6. I stopped at 6.
Yeah.
The King's Quest games.
Speaking of quests, did you are you aware of Chris Pope's thing where he got the guys from Space Quest back together? They formed this company called Two Guys from Andromeda. And
oh yeah, there's that too. Yeah, that's a successful Kickstarter game, and that's currently in production.
Huh. Well, that's good. I mean, I cut my teeth on those. Those are like my first DOS games. Was the King's Quest and Space Quest games back in the day.
The developer is called The Odd Gentleman is the name of the developer that's making the next King's Quest series.
Oh, okay. So space games are kind of in a resurgence now, thank God.
I don't know if I would say that yet.
Well.
I mean, we have Elite, we have Star Citizen.
And we have a lot of little guys. Yeah. A lot of little guys.
But they still are. I mean, the support that Star Citizen's gotten is heartening.
I'm afraid of it, actually.
I'm kind of terrified of it, too. I think that project has evolved into just a fundraiser. And, you know, it's kind of, I mean, hopefully that's not the case. And they're just doing what they need to ensure they can make as big an ambitious a project as they wanted to. But. You know, it would be nice if there was some major producers, publishers also supporting the genre as well. And you know, there was a project like Elite, it would be great to see them have the commercial success that would justify kind of further expansion into the genre. And maybe someone even picking up the Free Space license again. I mean, what's the latest on that? Can anyone give any info on the status?
The latest is that somebody has, the entire Free Space license now. I forget who. It might even be Interplay.
No, I think it's the same. You know those guys who are doing that Heavy Gear game? I think they have it. I think.
Okay. I know the rights were in limbo for a long time because half of them resided with Volition and half with Interplay, because Volition developed it but Interplay published it. So since it was sort of split in half, nobody could do anything. So it really took someone with enough money to get all the rights together in one place.
Yeah, I thought Interplay bought them back in 2013.
Oh.
As part of that at THQ's bankruptcy, that it kind of Interplay now has the entire rights back, I think. And they bought it for the whopping price of $7,500, which we could have bought ourselves maybe. If we could have had our own little fundraiser to buy it.
Really? And what are they going to do with it if they own it? What are they going to do with it? Nothing.
So
probably absolutely.
Sell Derek Smart for $8,000 for a $500 profit.
Another great business decision by Interplay, ladies and gentlemen.
That's how they roll these days.
Oh, my God.
Oh, dear.
I mean,
there was a big dust-up on Hardlight Productions a couple of years back when Derek Smart actually visited the forum claiming that he would buy the license to Free Space. That's a whole other story, and it's probably not something that we should go into, but that happened before.
He made that claim, and he certainly seemed to have tried to abide it. But if he couldn't even afford $7,500, I don't know how serious he was. Like, dude, even your games must sell enough to buy that.
I mean, it's such the story of Free Space 2 is so tragic yet awesome and unheartening at the same time. I mean, it kind of gives me hope that more stuff like this can happen ultimately. I mean, this game, like we talked about earlier, was just a flop, you know, at release.
Awesome. Mm-hmm.
And now it's something like you would call a movie a cult hit. This is something of a cult hit.
Well, I guess maybe, you know, even when it came out, we were complacent because it was just like, oh, well, you know, we get a lot of space games. It's like what happened with Flight Sims, right? It was just like, well, you know, we could just kind of, you know, maybe not regard every one of them as a treasure or whatever. And then you go 15 years down the road and it's like, oh, wow, you know, there's like two Flight Sims that are left. And,
and we're still playing Jane's Longbow 2.
You know, I think even the fact that the Free Space series happened the way it did is maybe part of the reason for its success today. Because you had Free Space 1, which is pretty good and stood on its own, more or less. And then you had Free Space 2, which ended on a gigantic cliffhanger. And then nothing happened next. So I think that sort of vacuum demanded that people fill it with their own mods, their own stories, their own user-generated content. I think there are at least that I can count offhand right now. There's Blue Planet, Inferno, and Blackwater Operations, three mods hosted on Hardlight Productions that are telling their own version of the story that comes after Free Space 2. And for anyone listening, if I forgot your mod, I apologize, and you could yell at me via private message later. Just so many people have been inspired to add their own take to Free Space and to say, you know, what comes next? Here's my idea. And the great thing about the Free Space story is that it's so rich and it's so consistent that you don't have to tell what comes next. You can tell what comes first, like we're doing in the Free Space port, or what comes in between, like there's a mod called Between the Ashes, which is telling some of the stories that happened during Reconstruction. And there are quite a lot of mods that are telling all sorts of stories associated with Free Space.
Yeah, I mean, there are, how many like missions and campaigns and mods would you say there are available for the game?
Oh, I don't know. A large number. easily dozens, possibly hundreds.
Has anybody attempted like a TIE Fighter full conversion?
A couple people have. A couple people have released proofs of concept. And I think there may be, in fact, there's one hosted mod called Fate of the Galaxy, which is working on bringing the Star Wars story and ships and gameplay to Free Space. I don't know. I don't really keep track with them, so I don't know how much they've released. But I do know that there have been a couple proofs of concept released already, and I do know that several people are working on their own versions of that.
Oh, okay.
That would be daunting because I'm playing through TIE Fighter now, and it's got like 100 submissions. It's huge.
Yeah. Hey, whenever you guys get sick of Free Space and you want to work on something else, could we could we maybe get a reboot of Klingon Academy? That'd be pretty nice.
Yeah.
If I could just get the original thing running, that would be pretty nice.
That would be great. I would love that. I wish I could. Jim, did I ever tell you back in the day with Klingon Academy, I used this thing called Game Commander, which is a voice command thing.
Oh yeah,
to give orders to the ship because it had this. Remember it was a massive like set of nested menus to control your ship.
Yeah, I was actually defeated by the interface in that thing. It was it was tough.
It was so great. It was so
maybe
great.
Maybe that could be a Kickstarter project, or. Maybe we could have a Kickstarter project for Secret of Vulcan Fury.
I gotta find those audio files.
Well,
first.
No, Janicki's got them under his bed. I'm sure they're in like a little tin.
I'm sorry, it's dead, Jim.
On that note, I think we're going to end it. I think
come on.
I think that's a perfect place to just shut it down. I think we got to shut it down.
I thought of that pun when
you start talking about what's under my bed.
Got to nuke it from orbit. It's the only way to be sure. Oh, Jesus Christ. Oh, God. Jim, has anyone ever pulled that on you before? Because I don't remember in the history of this podcast
actually, it's dead, Jim. The thing that I get the most is that the former governor of the state and I share the same name. So
what?
Yeah. And so I get a whole lot of being called the governor. And yet I don't get the paycheck. So, you know,
which state
that.
Had a governor called Azarum?
It's a crazy state.
Ever.
Yeah.
The state of indifference.
But,
when did Free Space and Free Space 2 become available on Steam? Only recently, right?
Yeah, within the past few months, I believe. First, Descent came first, and then Free Space 2 about a month or two after that, I think.
That was back in June, I believe. I have some concerns about that particular pattern of behavior that Steam's been doing. Because, look, good old games is good old games, and that's what we go there for, right? And they carry a few newish things, but for the most part, they're resurrecting and making compatible again the old good things. And then at some point, we've seen, like, there's been a tremendous and very rapid evolution in game publishing, right? Because we've seen just in the last 2 years, Kickstarter, and then the green light process, and then early access, which you know, everybody that ever said, "Boy, I'd pay money to be in that beta," well, now you can. And so now, what we're seeing Steam do is they're actually reaching into the past, and they too are pulling out these licenses that have not been seen for a long time, and a lot of them are not at all good. Like they put Gunship on there. Oh God. So,
Well, am I right in thinking that the Free Space 2 version of Steam, you need to run like a registry file to get the damn thing to run in the first place?
Yeah. Interplay, they kind of botched the release because when they first published it on Steam, it needed that registry fix in order to run. It wouldn't run otherwise.
Oh, my God.
Unless you had previously installed Free Space from your CD, and really, who's going to do that if you're going to, you know, if you're looking for it on Steam?
Wait, what?
Yeah, it turned out that if you install it from the CD, that registry setting is set correctly. So then if you subsequently install it if you install it from CD, the registry is set correctly. Subsequently, if you install it from Steam, it'll use that registry and it'll work properly. Yeah, so there's that.
What the?
We actually
right? What?
We actually scrambled on the source code project team. We released a patch, a new version of the 3.7.2 release candidate in order to accommodate that issue that was interfering with the Interplay Steam release.
Oh. That must have been frustrating as hell because that's big news, a game like this getting on Steam. That's a lot of options.
It was. And it actually revealed some of the bugs in the Free Space Open Installer that I hadn't been aware of because all of a sudden people were absolutely clobbering the installer and clobbering the mod mirrors and trying to install these mods. So I had to fix a bunch of bugs and I had to change the way the things were downloaded so it would take up less bandwidth, and then the source code project had to make the code fix to accommodate the registry, and we ended up doing a whole bunch of things.
So since you mentioned bandwidth, yes. How does this project pay for itself? Because bandwidth and hosting is not free, and then, you know, of course no profit is coming from this because you're not selling anything. So do you just have like some rich people that really like Free Space, or do you take community donations or what?
That's so there are a number of arrangements. Hardlight Productions is supported by donations. So a plug for all you listening on the podcast, please donate to Hardlight Productions and support our hosting fees.
Yeah. What is the monthly burn on that? If you don't mind me asking.
I actually don't know. I could point you to someone who does know. I'm not aware of that offhand. I do know that we use a lot of bandwidth on the forums and a lot of bandwidth on the mods. The mods actually are hosted separately from the Hard Light Productions main site. A lot of mods are hosted on a site called freespacemods.net, and that's run by a guy named Ashtung. Attention in German.
Wow.
Is the source of his username. So he, I believe he supports Free Space Mods out of the goodness of his heart. So, I mean, I don't know if he takes donations, but if you feel like donating something to him, I'm sure he'd appreciate
it. So when I fire up your installer and I tell it, go retrieve everything, then does it actually reach out to a bunch of diverse sources to pull stuff? Or do you have a central repository that it gets?
So we have a central repository of links, and the links are just contained in text files, so that's not very bandwidth intensive. The links tell the installer which mod mirrors have downloads available. So it'll go and it'll look to see if that site is online, and if it is online, it'll download the file from that site. And if it's not, it'll try all the mirrors in the list until it runs out of mirrors.
That sounds pretty awesome. So, folks, if you have not yet played this amazing game, why are you listening to this spoiler-filled podcast? You just ruined it for yourself. You should have stopped listening an hour and a half ago. But unless you don't care about spoilers.
Spoiler, it's got spaceships in it.
Yeah, amazing spaceships.
In the space.
But folks, if you have not played this game and you're listening to this and you have any interest at all in this genre, and why would you be listening to this if you didn't? Get this game, play this game, because it deserves to be played. It deserves to be on everyone's hard drive because it's just so fucking good. I'm trying to curse less because people have been complaining about that, you know. But fuck it, this game is so fucking good, people.
they don't mind the cursing. They just mind that you're so not good at it.
Hey, you know what? You can go fuck yourself, all right? I'm from Philly. We were born to curse there. Okay. But anyway, I want to thank my guests, or our guests. Oh, sorry, Jim. I want to thank our guests, Ian and
Sorry,
Stephen.
That was me accidentally dropping off.
Oh, what? I didn't even notice. What happened?
Oh, I tried to click a notification, and I clicked the hang-up button instead.
Oh, no, but you got back on. That's amazing.
Yeah,
I thought he was
just really offended, finally, at Brian.
Terrified by your vulgarity.
Yes.
I was under the impression that there was some sort of chime or something to let you know that someone has left the conversation.
No, well, I only have one. I'm a heathen. I'm an Amish person who only has one monitor, so I can't look at Skype. Well,
I think it happened right quick enough that we didn't even – because sometimes it will, but so
good job,
man. You can be found at hardlight.net,
right?
And anywhere else that you have a web presence that we should know about.
That's pretty much it. Hardlight, hard-light.net is Hardlight Productions. The source code project is hosted at scp.indiegames.us. That's pretty much. That's where we work on bug reports and stuff. So okay, really, the main site
is Hardlight Productions completely devoted to free space development,
mostly,
or do you do other stuff?
For the vast majority of it is devoted to free space. We have a couple other mods. We have the Wing Commander Saga mod. Well, we have a forum for Wing Commander Saga that's on our site, and we also have like a couple mods for. Homeworld, I believe, and a mod for Mech Commander, I think. And both of those are free space mods on different engines. So,
wait, there's a free space mod for Mech Commander?
Mech Commander Omnitech, yeah.
What? Wait, what? Is it like Ground War in the free space universe?
I know very little about the mod except for its name, so
I love Mech Commander. I should look into that.
It does say, a new mod for the Mech Commander game engine, now powered by Hardlight Productions.
Wow.
Whoa.
Yeah.
I have to look into that.
So Deathlock, if we want to read your stuff, are you still writing somewhere?
I live now only in your memories.
Well, we have to get the team back together. We have to form a posse and reform this. It's just gaming is just off the rails, man. We have to fix this.
Fix what?
I don't know. I'm just declaring it a problem so we can get Deathlock to commit to.
Okay.
I may be writing a few things at 2:45 in the near future to help fill some gaps while our friend Tom gives out action for a bit.
Yeah,
we should put actually a link to his fundraiser on the site, just kind of link over if you haven't done that already, perhaps.
No, I have not, but I will add it to the podcast. I just need to make a note of it. But, gentlemen, I want to thank you so much for joining us. This has been a very fun look and very enlightening in a lot of ways as to, again, the greatest game ever made. Let's just say it right now. The greatest game ever made. Folks on the stream and listening on the podcast, thank you as always for listening. If you have a suggestion or a request for a guest or a topic, you can always hit us up at hail@spacegamejunkie.com. And thank you so much to our guests and all you for listening. Have a great night, everyone. I'm about to cut the stream. Bye!